recently received her MPH from the University of Medical Sciences and Technology, UMST, and her medical degree from Juba University in Southern Sudan. She has a background in research, advocacy, and media. Dr. Salih is experienced in participatory ethnographic evaluation and research and community readiness assessment in post-conflict settings. She's an advisor for GHETS, a U.S.-based NGO, and she's serving as a MENA program specialist for GHLO Collaborative of the AAMC.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. It's really not easy to follow up those wonderful presentations and to be the last person, but I'm going to take you way from the U.S. to Africa, and in Africa in southern Sudan, where I've worked for some time. I come from Sudan, from the northern part of Sudan, but I've worked a lot in southern Sudan. And southern Sudan, if you have heard, is the newest nation in the world. In 2011, they have got their independence, and it has a population of 8 to 11 million. Statistics are not really clear in that environment because of the lack of infrastructure there. South Sudan endured 50 years or more than 50 years of civil war that resulted in the death of 2 million and the displacement of about 4 million internally and externally. And it's not unreal to say that it does have the worst maternal mortality rates in the world. In 2004, the UNICEF posted this, that a girl in South Sudan is more likely to die during pregnancy or childbirth than to finish primary school. The maternal mortality rate in South Sudan reached 2,054 deaths per 100,000. Illiteracy rates are really high, reaching about 62%. And not to say that not a lot of work has been done, but it's really difficult to work in a post-conflict area where there was nothing to begin with, and then when the war came, all the infrastructure or whatever was there has been even destructed more. This is an example of one of the tools that is used to promote for maternal health in South Sudan. And I'm not assuming that anybody can speak Arabic or read Arabic for that matter here. So if you can just imagine that 62% of the population in South Sudan, when they see this picture, they really don't understand what's going on in it because it's totally dependent on your ability to read what's there. South Sudan people don't dress like that. It's not context friendly. It does not represent who they are or what they do. This is the real context in southern Sudan. This is what you would see in most of the rural communities. And as you can see, there's a lack of almost everything. There's no safe water, there's no sanitation, there's no electricity. And you wonder, as a public health professional, as a doctor, as somebody who just wants to help, what do you do in circumstances like this? You want to bring everything. You want to bring all the resources that you can think about that you saw somewhere else in there, but that's not realistic, it's not feasible, and it's not cost-effective, and definitely not sustainable. So we were a group of about seven public health professionals. We thought we wanted to do something different. We wanted to work with the women in South Sudan to at least try to improve their maternal health situation. We wanted to be different. We wanted to do something different than what's traditionally done. So we wanted to keep an open mind. This is the framework that we had in mind. Be open-minded as doctors, as public health professionals, empower the local community, understand their context, and even though that we used to be one nation, but we totally are different. In Sudan, before the separation, they used to be, or still there are, but now they're placed in different locations, 250 tribes with their own beliefs and religions and languages. And it's really hard. And I mean, this is one of the factors or the reasons why it's really difficult and complicated to work in places like South Sudan or Sudan for that matter. Utilize local resources because we wanted to use what is already there. Looking at sustainability, if you don't use local resources, then you're totally going to be dependent on what is coming from outside. And once that's done and finished, then your program is over. So we got some funds from an NGO based here in the U.S., and I just want to pinpoint that it's for coming from Sudan, coming from a developing country and being in public health, it's really not easy to get grants and funds, because if they do not have something to do with the big three, malaria, TB, or HIV, then there's no chance that you're going to get any money. There's a few number of organizations that really trust indigenous knowledge, that trust locals who are professionals, that they know what they're doing without telling them what to do. GETS is one of those organizations, Global Health Reeducation Training and Services, that really just kind of hand out the money and let you control it, let you direct it where it's going. Of course, there is reporting and evaluation to see your results, but it gives you that entitlement as a local to be empowered to do what you see fit within your own context. So we started our empowerment process. We started with 15 women, illiterate women, from 15 different villages within Upper Nile State, that post-conflict, a state that really endured heavy, heavy fighting during the war. So 15 illiterate women, we started with simple games, like the one that you see, I'm sure a lot of you saw that rope game, just to let them feel included and give them a sense of what is it like to be really in your community, a practical demonstration of your power as an individual, as a woman within your home and within your community and within your village. I just wanted to note that I think about 70% of these women we did not speak the same language with, so it was really critical for us to communicate with them using non-language dependent tool like this game. Then we wanted to understand the context. And as a researcher, that is really also essential and very important. How do you understand? How do you get information and data from people who do not speak the same language? How you cannot send out data collectors or surveys and expect to get reliable information? So what we did is we distributed disposable cameras. We asked them to take pictures of their daily life from the moment that they wake up in the morning until they sleep, and then when they came back after a week, we debriefed them on those pictures. Why did you take this picture? What did it mean to you? And we got this really enormous amount of rich qualitative data that we were able to analyze and subtract themes from that meant something in terms of reproductive and child health. And we were able, from a professional point of view, we were able to understand what kind of behavior, alarm issues came to point, what we saw as important to address to help them with the maternal health situation that they have. But it's really amazing that when we conducted workshops to let them identify what they thought they wanted to change in the issues that mattered to them the most, the things that we thought were important did not come up in that list. What was important to them was a little bit different. So it's really amazing that one of the biggest issues that they wanted to address was domestic violence. And that was really important to them. It was something that they were dealing with. They thought that they needed to address this issue. So we helped them during our training to develop tools to address domestic violence. They used songs. They wrote songs. They sang them. We moved around from village to village teaching those songs that had context that addresses domestic violence. We used pictures. We used plays. And this is just a video to show you an example of one of the songs that's been written by one of the women that we trained. Thank you. So sitting back in Khartoum, we never thought that we were going to, this is what we're going to be doing, that this is the tools and this is the song. We would never have thought of writing a song with these lyrics and these words and doing that. But this is the outcome of keeping an open mind. This is an outcome of including the local community and utilizing their own indigenous knowledge in delivering whatever intervention that would address the issues that are important to them. So as I told you, we started with 15 women, and those we were keen on training them in a way that they would be able to train other women later on or other members of the community. And we ended up within less than a year with about 55 trained individuals from different villages within the Upper Nile State. And unfortunately, we did not have the chance to follow up and evaluate really accurately the effects or the results of our work, because Sudan, South Sudan became a different nation, then it required visas, and getting across the borders was no longer as easy as it used to. But I hope you benefit from this experience in a totally different context than the U.S. Thank you.